This is Guy Bogart on his 160th joyous air visit of our cats. Ernest Thompson Seton, in his Ten Commandments of the Animal World, states, quote, "Years ago I set for my theory that the Ten Commandments are not arbitrary laws given to man, but are fundamental laws of all highly developed animals," unquote. More and more people are realizing that man is not something entirely separated from creation. Our cats and ourselves are not unrelated, but part of a pattern called life. And running through that pattern is proven the truth of Paul's words, "And the greatest of these is love." In a letter yesterday to a friend, I stated, "I'm sorry we have to waste so much energy negatively, or would we if we more fully understood love? We awaken with a heart filled with love, but I fear it becomes a bit diluted as the day wears on. The love of Gautama, Jesus, Debs, Gandhi, and their kind appeals, but I fear it is more of a yearning than an agenda." That's just an introduction to saying why I have through the years liked to read the articles and books of Alan DeVoe, because he approaches his nature study in this spirit of love. Some months ago, the McGraw-Hill Book Company of New York published, at 375, Our Animal Neighbors, written by Mr. DeVoe with his wife, Mary Berry DeVoe. It's one of those books you do not want to borrow from the library. You'll want it on your very own shelves to read again and to share with your animal-loving company. Early in their married life, this American naturalist and his young Irish-born bride brought their ideal old-fashioned farmstead in the Berkshires, and much of their nature study observations have been made there in New York, winter and summer, carefully, patiently, intelligently studying their neighbors with sympathy and with love, not trying to anthropomorphize them, but loving them and coming as closely to entering their lives as it is possible for humans. It is more than just knowledge of animals they bring. We think of Seton mentioned above, of Burroughs, of Thoreau, when reading Alan and Mary DeVoe. In fact, we do not seem to be reading, so vividly do they write that we seem to be looking through their observing and understanding eyes as the unfolding panorama of the world about them. They show the personalities of these little neighbors, and from their experiences select a wealth of data on woodchucks, muskrats, Whitefoot the mouse, the deer, coons, cottontails, fox, and old Mephitis. I've told you of some of my visits in the hills about Beaumont, lying quietly on a sunny big boulder while the hummingbird sat on my wrist for a brief pause after finding nothing sweet in its investigations of my hair, the little lizards crawling over my feet, and the insects as incurious about me as the wild flowers they were inspecting. And as I read Our Animal Neighbors, I could feel a little, at least, of the thrill to Mr. and Mrs. DeVoe. All listeners to our cat's program, and most emphatically your speaker, can copy these words into his deepest consciousness. Quote, "All the created world, in all its parts and entirety, is a united whole. All the creatures in it are in a common brotherhood. Everything is interconnected with everything else. Not only is there a basic brotherhood between a man in England and a man in America, or a man in Antarctica and a man in Siberia, but there is a bond between a mouse or a tree or a fox or a frog or a raccoon. We are all participants together in the united entity of the creation. We are all the creatures of the one parental and primary source of all begetting, whether we like to call that source nature, or may like to call it something like the life force, or may like to employ the traditional language of religious utterance and use the name of God," unquote. I wish I could sit with you this evening and read all of Our Animal Neighbors, but at least you can share with me this understanding, quote, "The sense of brotherhood with all our fellow ingredients in the created world is a very old thing, a primitive awareness, a kind of spontaneous poetry going back to earliest dawn days. An Aboriginal Indian thought of a bear as his brother. He felt relationship and thus a kind of family obligation, even to the herbs he gathered and the trees he felled. But the sense of brotherhood thus felt is not merely a primitive thing. It has been felt by religious men and aware men in all times. There was St. Francis of Assisi looking out upon a universe of what he understood to be his fellow creatures, and so saluting with affection his sister, the moon, and his brother, ox, and his brothers, the wolf, and the stag, and the heron, and the rabbit. This the primitive man and contemplative men have always felt, this brotherhood of all the creation, all brought into being by the same creative agency, all under a responsibility, thus both filial and fraternal, is something our kind of naturalist every day sees more and more clearly to be a strict fact. All the creatures of which we are but one are brotherly components in the one whole of nature. We share a grandfather with owls and with the striped dace that swim in our creek. We have a family link with the oak tree that towers on the hill. We are brothers of a woodchuck, the brother of a small Mephites with a plumy tail, and the brother of the dark moss that grows on the stone in the forest. A naturalist sense of community with all the rest of the living, breathing fellowship of beings may not often expand in such a high mystical gesture as this to include vegetations, rocks, waters, and the most distant glitter of stars in the night sky. But it is the sense of this recognition, or at least in some degree, that does give any naturalist a great part of his reward. And it is the possibility of making the fellowship an ever closer intimacy, of taking the reality of it so entirely to you that, as it were, you can hold it in your possessing hand, warm with the warmth of the woodchuck youngster, damp with the dewy dampness of the felted blanket over a nest of baby cottontails, quivering and life-pulsing with the tremulousness of a little fawn nibbling at your fingers in the summer dusk, that makes a certain kind of naturalist choose to be a neighborhood naturalist, unquote. I hope you have liked these few typical paragraphs of conclusions, but you've missed the intimate descriptions of close association with the DeVos animal neighbors. If you plan a birthday or some other anniversary gift, here is a number one offering, and any good bookstore can furnish it to you. I've long had a habit of reading several good books every week, but for about every three new books, I take from my library shelves one of the old favorites, and the DeVos writings are among those always living and friendly. You and your cats and kittens, the flowers and grass they play among in your yard, everything is life, and you are related to it, truly. Or, in over 3 years, have you tired of my saying this? As the poet has expressed it, the thread that runs through all and doth all unite. Before we reluctantly bid good night to Alan and Mary DeVos, let's take to heart this sentence from Whitefoot, quote, "What is required of us is only this, that we humble ourselves to creatureliness with the rest of the brotherhood of the earth. What is required of us is only this, that we take on faith with trusting hands the gift of life as it is given and bow our heads a little," unquote. In the September number of the American Mercury, Alan DeVos wrote a feature about the Abbot and the Talks to Tigers. Both the editor and Mr. DeVos have consented to its use over KFOX, and later we shall hear about this. You may have noticed it was also copied in the Reader's Digest. This is not only our cats, but our program. And I appreciate the audience participation over the years. Cora B. Story of San Gabriel, who used to live in Long Beach and listened to Uncle Hal and recalls Nosey and Barty and the birds, says, "I am and always have been a lover of cats." She shares with us her verse, "Sleepy Cat." "You pretty little kitty cat with your fur of black and gray, I wonder what you dream about when you're asleep all day. Do you dream about wild parties in the alley over there, where we hear sometimes loud voices piercing through the midnight air? Or do you dream about the mousies and something, at times a big old rat? Quit your blinking and your winking and answer me, you winsome sleepy cat." Thanks, Cora B. Story. Miss May Moust of Los Angeles expresses her appreciation in two poems sent for your sharing. "I remind you for the manyth time that each of you has a magnificent cat that should disown you if you don't shout its praises from the housetops, and let me whisper it over the air lanes. For whether pedigreed or so-called ordinary cat, as if anything created could be ordinary, for I say your cat is a part of life and as sublime as the tadpole or the Milky Way. I like what Ralph Morris used to say, make a pal of your pet." Miss May Mouse writes, "Kittens are so soft and sweet, melting eyes our love do greet, pink wax ears, nose so small, paws like petals softly fall, prancing laughter, tumbling grace, fur a flutter, toss and pace, whiskers talk, tails twirl, purring thanks is their grace, pause and pet them, love you taste." And this one, "Be kind to animals, for God made them so, that if you show them kindness, a friendship will grow. So much joy is ours to gain if we to them are just tame, not rough and rude or kicking screams. No animal could love anything so mean." And we close with the familiar lines of Lynn Hamilton, whose poetry has become so familiar to all of us. We take this few lines from the opening of her Soliloquy at Dawn, a picture of the old Egyptian cat. "I have seen countless dawns in ages gone, dawns flooding splendor on a palace wall and pouring liquid gold through frescoed hall to gild the images and icons drawn of Goddess Bast before great Egypt's fall." This is Guy Bogart in "Love and Joy to Every Cat Lover, Every Cat Not Lover, Pity Them, and to Every Cat and Kitten, and to All Life, Happy Purrs."